we're back. Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us through the magic of technology and time travel.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome from the past or from the future, wherever it may be.
Well, I am just so delighted that Dave Gettleman has been fired, finally. Odell Beckham, strangely, who saw him landing with the Jets? Didn't see that coming. So, all sorts of crazy news that we have to talk about today, Tuesday, the 19th, 16th, whatever it is. Very exciting.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're all well. I hope we're all well at this point. We are here, in the future, because Eric had a previous engagement, which never happens, by the way. It's
no.
An odd thing. So we're continuing our month of talking about Argentina, about South America, of which Argentina is basically the major player. So we're going to spend today talking a little bit more about that before we delve into, and we'll delve into a little parts of Uruguay today, and then take on Chile, etc., in the coming weeks. I hope everybody's well. I know a lot of people are having their kids immunized through this immunized. I shouldn't use that word. Vaccinated, and I hope that's all turning out well as booster shots are going on. I myself just had one this past Thursday, so I'm feeling terrific, after it.
Well, you look good from here.
Thank you, sir. Yes, and I'm sorry that I couldn't be in studio sharing another wonderful wine from Argentina, but we have the future. So Argentina, as we've talked about, it's obviously the major player in the South American wine industry, although it was not, and we'll talk about this a little bit more when we talk about Chile, but Chile was actually the first place that really got major, not only investments from Europe, but also the benefit of people shipping the wine out of country. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, but obviously Argentina has come on in such a huge way, and we talked last week about how it really started in the 1500s, the mid-1500s, 1556, and then later 1557 was the commercial vineyard, the first commercial vineyard, and how they went out and really brought in the noble varieties of the Bordeaux region, as well as some other grapes that have either taken root or long since vanished. So let's talk a little bit more about the early days. As I said, it was in 1886 that it really started to have a tremendous international influence because of the railway that was built from Buenos Aires. And it's not to be disregarded that it's not an easy place to get to. So despite the fact that it had a lot of immigration and resettlement of colonists, it was not a commercially viable area really until that time. And as I said, it really didn't come on in, this is such a jingoistic way of looking at, but it didn't really come on in the U.S., as I said, until mid-90s at best and really into the 2000s. That said, it is the fifth largest producer in the world, which is tremendous to think about. It's not a small country, but it's not an enormous country. So that's quite remarkable. And the uptick was in the middle of the last century, again, providing post all the messes, post phylloxera, post World War One and two, post prohibition in the U.S., and post a bunch of other strife in countries that we don't really acknowledge, because frankly, if it didn't happen in our borders, it doesn't matter. But they, like the rest of the world, had a lot of prosperity, which is why Argentina today is a fairly, first world country. It's the eighth richest nation in the world, in fact, despite all of its ups and downs. There was a military dictatorship after Juan Perón. Anybody who's ever seen, of course, Evita knows a little bit about those days, but still, it was, you know, it was a profitable place to be, and people exploited it. And I began to touch on a little bit at the end of last week the concept of the flying winemakers and the initial sort of investments, both from primarily Europe, as well as investments from the people who are making investments in bringing in qualified folks, as they considered it, because there weren't a lot of truly gifted enologists in that part of the world. So what happened was there was a lot of foreign investment, and then they started flying in people. I mentioned last week Michel Roland, who was sort of gifted this title of the flying winemaker. But in truth, they brought in a lot of people who had expertise in the grapes that they were trying to showcase. Of course, Malbec, I would suggest a secondary, if not tertiary, grape in Bordeaux here, you know, really coming into its own light, but also your Malbec, your Merlot, your Cab, some interesting other varietal expressions. But it made a lot of sense to bring in the French experts and say, okay, well, here's our thing. And again, as I mentioned last week, Nicolas Catena of the Catena, Bodegas Catena, was really the first one to start specializing in not just high altitude, but also terroir-specific vineyard sites, saying, okay, this grows this. You know, again, very much in the French model. This is nothing new. It's simply in a different part of the world with its own particularities. As I mentioned, high and dry, very, you know, extremes of altitude. So you get, you know, some tremendous varieties that, you know, they're not all French, yeah? So you get weird things like Bonarda. Bonarda is a grape originally from Italy or the Savoie region of France. They're not really sure, but it grows beautifully there and offers a very sort of dark-toned blueberry licorice quality to some wines. As I said, you know, last week again, Pais, Torrontes, Malbec. It's really, really kind of neat. And then to juxtapose it, we'll go over to Uruguay, which is itself sort of this France through a mirror darkly, where they have their primary red grape, Tanat. Now, Tanat is from the Basque region of France, so just south of Bordeaux, getting into this area that obviously is its own sort of individualistic, very much like your Sicilies, your parts of Ireland, where they're neither French nor Spanish, they're Basque, and the Tanat that they make there is very kind of, and again, this is a gross generalization, but tends to be a little bit more gamey, more chewy, a more, you know, substantial thing. Whereas in Uruguay, it's really blossomed, like Malbec has, into this much more customer-friendly, palate-friendly, sort of chocolatey raspberry incarnation, which is, I mean, frankly, just delightful. And then they also have things like Malvasia and other interesting European grapes that, again, it doesn't necessarily match region for region. It's what people selected and what's growing nicely there. So it's very, very cool. I should mention, by the way, Tanat in that part of the world is called Harig. So if you happen to be in that part of the world and you're looking for these things, there you go. How are we for time, sir?
Oh, we're just inside a minute.
Okay, very good. Well, then I will wrap up by saying that I will join you all next week. Be looking to come on into the store masked up, ready to be patient. We are getting into our busy pre-Thanksgiving season, so Any requests that you have, maybe submit them via email, message us, let us know so that we can be ready, if possible, to best serve your needs, because it's going to be busy, busy, crazy, crazy, and we thank you all for that, believe me. But the best we can serve you is served by, you know, fair warning.
There you go. Well said.
But other than that, everybody stay well, be well. Can't wait to talk to you next week.
Awesome. I hope you're having fun, whatever you're doing in actual time.
I am eating, sir.
Oh,
eating.
You're all set.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Eric. See you next week.
Cheers.